cop that was deleted over this past weekend. More details are coming out about the persons that allegedly committed this crime and deleted him. Take a look.
Two men have blood on their hands tonight, and the more we learn about their background and their alleged criminal intent, the more infuriating this gets. Residents here especially alarmed at how much violence spilled out on this busy road. Tonight, more disturbing details of the men now in custody. The cell phone video shows the arrest of the alleged killer. Investigators now believe two ex-convicts were casing a T-Mobile store on Mott Avenue in Far Rockaway. Monday night, two officers with the community response team asked them to move their Kia from the bus stop where they were apparently parked illegally. That's when the encounter turns deadly. Officials say they refused to roll down their windows. Officer Jonathan Diller ordered the passenger to show his hands. Instead, the passenger allegedly pulled a weapon on the officer and killed him, the bullet striking just below Diller's vest.
They have no regard, no respect for the law, for citizens, for people.
Records show the passenger, 34-year-old Guy Rivera, has 21 prior arrests, including 9 felonies. He was released from prison about 2.5 years ago. Police say his illegal gun and an alarming amount of ammunition were recovered at the scene. The driver of the car has been identified as 41-year-old Lindy Jones. Officials point out he's been arrested 14 times, incarcerated for a decade, then released, and just last year was arrested again on another gun charge, yet Jones was currently out on bail. The heavy rap sheets for both men, the loss of a brave young officer, have broken the city's heart. Expressions of grief now grace multiple precincts.
All night long, I couldn't sleep. It's directly on them. It's on the state legislature and the assembly. They need to fix these problems.
The community is in an uproar, and we just pray for him and his family.
Rivera, who allegedly fired at the officer, was shot in the back by Diller's partner. He is expected to survive. The driver was not hit by any of the bullets. The city feeling the loss tonight.
Rap sheets long. Hey, I'm sure it was some people out there that were saying, free Ray Ray. Free Ray Ray. We all know who the killers are. We all know where the guns is. Casing a T-Mobile store. Casing a T-Mobile store. They asked them, hey, move your car, family. Wouldn't even roll their windows down. All right, man, listen, bro. Y'all put your hands up, bro. Shot, gone, end of conversation. And they gonna survive. The killers and the crimes, the people that's committing the crimes, they always live. They get 3 hots in a cot. They get a TV. They get comfortable. If they have good behavior, they'll be able to go into a lower security prison. They get snacks. Make sure that you put some stuff on their books. They a real one. Now they stamped. They stamped in the hood. They may be able to get off of good behavior. Widowed. Children. No father. Police officer for 3 years. End of discussion. End of discussion. Stop and frisk. It violates our constitutional rights. Well, police officer gone. Police officer gone. And they were casing a T-Mobile store. Casing a T-Mobile store. Jesus. Unreal. In addition to that, also in quick hits, Illinois parole board members are resigning over what again?
After the CBS2 investigators pressed the state for days, they finally admit mistakes involving the release of an inmate from Stateville prison. Hours later, that inmate is accused of going on a deadly attack. Meanwhile, 2 key state employees responsible for his release resigned today. Our Megan Hickey picks up the story from there.
Jaden Perkins' loved ones gathered for a celebration of life Monday, less than 2 weeks after the 11-year-old's friends and loved ones gathered near the Edgewater home, where he was stabbed to death on March 13th. Police say Chrisetti Brand had the knife.
The offender was released from prison yesterday.
That's right. He was paroled and released from the Illinois Department of Corrections custody the day before the murder. And that release happened despite Jaden's pregnant mother, Latarya Smith, who was also brutally stabbed, pleading in court last month to try to get a protective order against Brand. A Cook County judge said a March 13th follow-up hearing about the order of protection that both parties were supposed to attend and directed Brand be notified in prison. IDOC and the Prisoner Review Board that gave the green light on Brand's release both told us they didn't know about this protection order hearing. But emails and other records obtained by the CBS2 investigators since this attack appear to contradict that. A February 22nd email states an employee with the Office of the Clerk of the Circuit Court of Cook County emailed the notice to an IDOC employee who she also spoke with on the phone. Today, a spokesperson for the clerk's office confirmed to us their office provided notification. Attempts to reach that specific Stateville Correctional Center employee were unsuccessful. Shortly after we submitted this new evidence to IDOC and the Prisoner Review Board for comment, Governor J.B. Pritzker announced the resignation of Prisoner Review Board member Leanne Miller, who wrote the report recommending Brand's release from prison. It is clear the evidence in this case was not given the careful consideration that victims of domestic violence deserve, Pritzker's announcement said in part. And late today, Governor Pritzker also announced the resignation of Prisoner Review Chair Donald Shelton. IDOC responded late today, acknowledging that their previous statement was wrong, and they did, in fact, receive a notification about the March 13th court date. We have asked if a communication failure like this could impact other people trying to get protective orders. The clerk's office said yes. For more,
we are living in a degenerate era slash nation right now. And I'm going to be honest with you. I don't believe that any of these people, including Governor Pritzker over in Illinois, has the general public's best interest at heart. I believe that they want to make sure that it doesn't fold back up to them. And we just going to ignore all of the recommendations and the Safety Act and all of this stuff and the no bail. And the people, it's the people that suffer. Families, friends, heartbreak, finances. It's the people that wind up suffering for the things that your legislators that you guys vote into office decide to do. And the laws that they create and the recommendations and the norms that they embrace that then lead to these type of people being back on the street. Last but not least, Haiti. I want to keep you guys updated on Haiti. It's more unrest, and our local leader, Barbecue, over there is having a field day.
Another day in Port-au-Prince, a lull in the fighting, and the cars are back on the streets. Another day and another body on the side of the road. It's becoming normal here. This man was shot. His family covered him and left. Burials Jesus are Christ. Expensive. Another street, two more bodies, a man and a woman shot as they rode a motorcycle. Nobody knows why any of these murders are happening. We see the dead every day. This city is burning and there seems to be no end, no solution, perhaps even no hope. Neighbourhood after neighbourhood is barricaded off. Some are gang territories, some are communities trying to protect themselves. Absolutely nowhere feels safe. Through the barricades, we were given permission to enter a place called Salino. This community of about 10,000 people has been attacked by two separate gangs for a year. They want to take it over. At least 80% of Port-au-Prince has fallen to the gangs, but not here. That's because Salino is protected by armed vigilantes and off-duty policemen who live here and fight together. Every day, this is a struggle to survive. They are surrounded.
Have y'all ever stopped for 1 second and asked yourself, for a place that is as poor as Haiti and Port-au-Prince, right? And how things are playing out over there. And that they can't even afford to take the bodies off the street that just wind up dying just right there in the daytime, right? For something like this to happen, have y'all ever even thought about something like, man, they can't even afford to breathe over there and they ain't even got clean water, but they got guns. How are so many weapons just flooding into the street? Bullets are expensive. Have y'all ever thought about that? Like, no water, can't bury their loved ones, just throw a sheet over them. But everybody got a pistol, multiple pistols, and bullets, and ammunition. Where are they getting it from? Is it a gun store somewhere that... Is it a gun store somewhere that I'm not aware of? Where are they getting all of these weapons from? Am I asking too many questions? Should I go ahead and end Quick Hits right now and keep going over to something else? I'm just asking. I'm always trying to understand because the math just don't math to me. The math ain't mathing. The math ain't mathin'.